Good evening, everybody. All right. So tonight, I am going to start the first part of what Mr. Schaefer and I are kind of working on as a tandem. Stuff having to do with the hydroplate theory, which was proposed by a man by the name of Walt Brown. Walt's about 86, 87 years old now. He is a Ph.D., in mechanical engineering, physical science, that kind of stuff. He used to teach at MIT. I mean, this guy knows his science, okay? He was at one time in his life, this is just a brief overview from where most of this information is going to come from tonight. One time in his life, he was, pretty much agnostic, atheistic, and just through the study of science, physical science, mechanical engineering, he came to understand there's no way these things through random processes could ever come about. So he became a creationist and then started to look at the scripture and some of the the apologetics that were out there in reference to some of the scientific, quote unquote, based arguments that the scientific community was bringing against people that believed that the Bible is the Word of God, that it's true. Okay, so he decided we got to look at some things and figure out how we can explain these. Because God obviously put into place, I mean, he started things miraculously. There's no doubt about that. But once he put things in place, he left what were discovered to be laws of physics and other things so that we could view and understand things going on around us and discover the clear indication that there's order and design, which would necessitate us thinking logically and rationally, okay, if there's order and design, who designed it? That it couldn't have come from just random action and chaotic events. You know, like I've told everybody, you ever seen a bomb go off and build a house when the bomb went off? You know, however, they can claim that the whole creation went off like a bomb and then we had order and everything else that came out of that. It's, when you really stop and think about it, I'm stunned that scientists actually believe that stuff. I really am. But they do. So one of the things that we want to look at is, and one of the key events in the Bible that we believe happened is true, and that you're going to find that scientists are going to attack big time, is the idea of the flood, worldwide flood. Okay, I think there's more and more information and data coming out that's moving more and more people in the science community that way, but in years past that wasn't necessarily the case. So what I want to do is just take a look at a couple of verses to start in chapter 1, and then we'll read in chapter 7, because the two go together in a way you'll see later on. And then I'll tell you what most creationists, and actually the ICR guys, Institutes for Creation Research, I think they're San Diego. I remember Henry Morse, I think, was a big dog in that. Am I right, Jared? That, yeah, okay. For years and years and years, they've promoted what's called the canopy theory, that there was a canopy that that was around the earth when it was first created by God. We're going to look at that, and then we're going to look at science answers or scientific questions or problems from a scientific perspective in reference to a canopy. Okay, could that be? But I just want to read chapter 1 here. We're going to start with verse 1. We're just going to read down through, we're going to go through verse 10. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. God saw that light was good, and God separated light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. There was evening, and there was morning, one day. Then God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." God made the expanse and separated the waters which were below the expanse from the waters which were above the expanse, and it was so. God called the expanse heaven. And there was evening and there was morning, a second day. Then God said, "Let the waters below the heavens be gathered together in one place, and let the dry land appear," and it was so. God called the dry land earth, and the gathering of the waters he called seas, and God saw that it was good. So you can see this waters above, waters below, this expanse. So that's kind of where they get this idea that there must be a canopy. Let's go to Genesis 7. This is going to talk about when the flood took place. So these are just kind of information we need to have as we start this study, as we begin to look at, was there a canopy? Is it possible? Okay, would it be likely? Okay, so in the 600 years, what we're going to pick up in Genesis 7, verse 11. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, on the same day, all the fountains of the great deep burst open, and the floodgates of the sky were opened. Then rain fell upon the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. So taking what I read there, those, you know, primarily from verse 6 through 10 there in Genesis 1 and these two verses in Genesis 7, you can see how people would say, well, it seems like there's water that came from above. So, you know, that's where these questions arise. So we're going to look at this and see what we can. I'm just going to set my Bible down here for now, because I'm going to be looking at some notes and giving you guys some of the perspectives about canopy and is it a possibility, what's the scientific questions on that. The reason I'm doing this, again, is the world is, well, they just don't believe in God, number one. That's becoming more and more evident. And you have to be able to deal with people in the world, and most of them, whether we want to admit it or not, have put an undue amount of, I'm going to call it emphasis. I would say they would, you know, say almost faith in science, quote unquote. And science today is not science of past years. Science today is you will conform to a prescribed set of standards, and you will not wander outside those. If you do, we're going to expel you from the community. Okay? So creationists very rarely are able to get things published in science journals and things of that nature because it doesn't meet the set agenda. So you got to understand, that's what people are fed from the time they enter the public school system until they get to an adult level. You know, an adult level is going to vary on people, but let's just say, you know, maybe a young end of the scale, 16, 17 years old, in my opinion. That's my opinion. On to whatever. They until they get to that age before they can really start to process and ask questions in their own mind and start to think rationally about, okay, all this stuff I've been told, does this make sense? You know, so you start to ask questions. And everybody in our lives, we go through one event or another that triggers something in us that begins the questioning process on everything. So for us, I think what's effective, what I'm trying to communicate, is that what we can do with people when they start talking about things, if you can find your way to get the conversation directed towards, I don't know, say they're talking about something in science, I don't know, the vaccines, whatever. Why, you know, you could argue with them about the vaccine's efficacy and all that. You know, that's great. You can do that. The data that comes back on the COVID-19 vaccines is pretty clear now across the world. They are not what they claim to have been, you know. Now, there are people you can show them all, and they're still not going to believe it. So I would just prefer to do things like I've done before. People like say, I can prove to you that the Bible's the Word of God, and I can prove to you the worldwide flood scientifically. I can prove that the Bible supports scientifically what the worldwide flood, what occurred with the worldwide flood and what the Bible records. And that's usually going to be, that's a challenge you're laying out there, right? So people are usually going to look at you and go, okay, Mr. Smarty Pants, I take that challenge, right? That's what you want. You want an opportunity to just, to get to sit down with them and start to go through stuff. So this is one of the things that you can do, this canopy thing. You could easily, in a conversation, somebody said, you find out they, you know, they say they go to church or they do this or do that. Oh, great. What do you think about the Bible? You know, what do you think? Do you think it's true? Most people are going to say, yeah, most people. And you say, so what do you think? Do you think there's a canopy around the earth? Do you think okay, you just started a conversation, didn't you? You just opened the door where you can actually discuss this topic with them now. And then you can bring the information that's going to give you a place where you can stand confidently from a scientific position. Mr. Brown has put together a way that he will debate evolutionists, and he's always put it down that we're going to stay strictly on science. We're not bringing religion in. Okay? So the problem is every time he gets one set up, from what I understand, from what I've read in his books and other things, is when he gets a debate set up with an evolutionist, they'll typically agree, but then they'll want to bring religion in, because that's what they're going to attack. See, they're going to try and attack this idea of religion and faith in God and all this. And he says, no, we're going to stay on the science only. So when he gets them set up, all these guys, he had one almost set up, ready to go, and at the very end, the guy bailed out because he wanted to bring religion in. And then when Walt said, no, we're not doing that, we're only going to do it on the grounds we agreed to. It's going to be a scientific debate following these procedures and, you know, all this written stuff, way that things could be recorded so that everything could be verified. This guy changed at the last minute. Walt said, no, we're not going to do it. And then when he said, no, I'm not going to debate you, that guy then went out and said, well, Walt Brown reneged on the debate with him. So that you're going to find something like that if you get on the internet. You'll find an example where some guy is saying that Walt Brown reneged. He backed out of a debate with him on the stuff that he wanted to bring forth in reference to his hydroplate theory and an explanation for the worldwide flood from scientific basis. It's not true. The guy wanted to change the rules, violated the rules they agreed to with the first, and is then gone on and said, this is what... And I don't know the guy's name, but this is what has happened. He's the only one that ever got close to the debate in Walt Brown, from what I understand. No other evolutionist, after looking at what he has available and how he wants to structure it, science only, no other evolutionist will debate him. That should tell you something right there. Okay, so this is the guy that put together this book called In the Beginning, Compelling Evidence for Creation and the Flood. Okay, so I've told people there's three books they should have in their library when they become a Christian. You should have Walt Brown's book, In the Beginning, because it's got such great scientific information. It helps you confidently explain things about creation and the flood and other things. The Exodus Case by Leonard Moeller. Okay, by the way, Mr. Moeller passed away at the end of 2021. And then the other book that I, you know, just so you have a monetary understanding, since they don't teach monetary principle in schools anywhere, public schools in particular, you want to get a book called The Creature from Jekyll Island. And Jekyll Island is off the coast of South Carolina, and that's where the guys got together. There was about 8 or 10 of them that their personal wealth equaled almost 1/4 of the wealth in the entire world when they got together about 1910. In Jekyll Island, and they came up with the formation of the Federal Reserve, which it is not federal, and there are no reserves. And that's a true statement when I make that. It is not federal, and there are no reserves. Okay? So, it's just a privately owned bank that's been given the right to, they don't even coin money like our Constitution calls for. They just print money out of thin air and then charge you interest on. I got a deal for you. Monopoly money. It really is. Okay. So those are three books you should have. So let's talk about this. Arguments for Canopy. We'll have some brief responses that, you know, come basically from Mr. Brown. I'll throw a couple of my own maybe comments here there in. And then we're going to look at the 7 problems from a scientific perspective for a canopy. Whether it's vapor, there's 3 ideas of a canopy. Vapor, that's gas. Water can come in 3 forms, right? Vapor or gas. Water, H2O we'll call it. Water, liquid, and ice, right? So the canopy, all of them have been proposed as either vapor, water, or ice. Right? So here's what they'll usually say. They're going to say, well, what about the source of the flood water? Which I just read those verses. And if you just look at it, and don't do any deep in-depth research into the words or think about it, you're going to go, yeah, it sounds like there had to be something above because it says there's waters above the expanse and waters below, right? So if all the water in the Earth's atmosphere were to condense, and this is a true statement that's made here, only an average of 1 inch of rain would fall. So they're saying there's got to be something more than just what's in the atmosphere. So Genesis flood raises 2 pretty common questions. They'll say, where did so much flood water come from? And where did it all go? See, so they're gonna, and that's a logical question, isn't it? It's not illogical, irrational. It's logical. And they'll say, see, a canopy is going to partially answer that first question. Second question, a little bit more difficult that a canopy is going to address. But anyway, so here's what would you need to understand. A common response from us would be, well, you know, no canopy theory claims to provide enough water for a global flood. And that's because when you look at a canopy theory, they will admit, the guys that are doing this from a scientific base, remember, Institute for Creation Research is a scientific-based operation down in San Diego, or they try to operate scientifically, as far as I understand. They've all run the numbers, and they know if you get a canopy, whether it's vapor, water, or ice, if it gets anywhere near 40 feet, where it would produce 40 feet of liquid to inundate the earth, major problems show up. Major. Now, you notice I said 40 feet of water. You think 40 feet of water would cover even the low-level mountains recorded in the early chapters of Genesis? Still got a problem, don't we, Houston? So, again, the thing is, you know, the answer lies, you know, in chapter 7 when it says, and the fountains of the great deep burst forth. Your answer is there. If you go back and look at that in Genesis chapter 11, it says the fountains of the great deep burst forth, okay? That's kind of a clue for you, okay? So it tells you something about water that came up from below that was in the earth, subterranean sources. So there's our first clue about subterranean water, okay? So most people that are out there in the scientific community will reject the Genesis flood account because they can't imagine where the flood water, which covered all these mountains, first of all, came from. There's no logical answer for it. Or went. There's no answer. See? So canopy theories tend to contribute to the rejection of the flood account when guys say, well, let's just, you know, you claim the Bible is scientifically sound. I do that when I study with people. I don't know about you, but I do. I tell people the Bible is scientifically sound. So when you say that, if you get a guy that's even remotely scientific, he's going to go, okay, like I said, Mr. Smarty Pants, let's see how you can explain this flood for me, right? And that's where they're going to go. It's a real easy way to attack you right off the bat. So you've got to be able to explain this. And there's information that we're going to look at after we get through the canopy stuff that has to do with this expanse between the waters, okay? Now, I'm going to save the drop in longevity. Have you ever heard? I got to drop back. When I became a Christian, according to what the Bible teaches, in 1994, okay, I got a hold of a book like a year into Christianity, and it came from Boise Bible College. I don't even remember how I got it. I think it may have came through Mark Badiger, the guy that was involved in discipling Kathy, and I can't remember for sure, but it was called Am I a Monkey's Uncle? And it was interesting. And in there it talked about, you know, flood and all this other stuff. And it was the first book I've ever seen that talked about a canopy. And I remember going, hey, that makes sense. Remember, I don't know much. That makes sense. And it said, you know, that would probably be the real good explanation for why people lived so long before the flood. This canopy would, you know, reduce the light and all this stuff that causes us to age. We'll address these things. And then once it went away, then, of course, things would change. Well, we'll get to that. I'm going to come to that last, a response on that last. I'm just telling you, that's one of the things they're going to bring up, okay? All right, so let's go to the next one they're usually going to say. Okay, a canopy would provide a uniformly warm climate. In a sense, if it existed, that's very true. But one of the problems is going to be that uniformly warm climate would be, depending on whether it's vapor, water, or ice, could be anywhere from a surface temperature of around 180 to 200 degrees on the low end to as high, and this is scientifically, you can prove it, as high as 10,000 degrees? It doesn't sound like much life would, right? Okay, so anyway, they'll say a canopy may have given the Earth a uniform warm climate. This might explain why fossils of temperate animals and plants, such as dinosaurs and large trees, are found in Antarctica, South Pole, and islands inside the Arctic Circle, North Pole. I can remember having this information presented, I thought, yeah, canopy makes sense on this. It does. I'm just telling you where I came from, okay? All right, now, even if a canopy produced a warm polar climate, remember, Genesis 1:14 still says that the stars and the sun, the moon, and everything were given for what? Seasons. So there were still seasons. There was still, you know, the earth still did its solar, you know, run. And or maybe you think the sun goes around the earth, whatever. I'm not going to get, there are some that, okay. Listen, I'm just going to say it and leave it alone. Okay, but anyway, it's still got to do that. And you're still going to have a high and a low latitude on the earth. Sun's still going to be hitting it a certain way, right? So let's say the canopy's supplying this warmth, as they claim, okay? Even if that's the case, lush vegetation requires a lot of sunlight. You don't get a lot of sunlight in the polar regions. So that alone is a big problem. 6 months of the year in the polar regions, nobody would ever argue that there'd be the same kind of light as you get at the equator, or 20 degrees north or south of the equator in the more temperate, you know, zones. They wouldn't argue. They wouldn't present that, see? So there's a problem there. So, and when it shines, it's low in the sky. It just isn't going to provide the necessary processes for chlorophyll and, you know, and all that to take place for the food chain to develop, right? So, you know, we have to take that into account as well. So no one knows what temperatures, I'm just saying, assuming the best conditions exist, that would have been under a canopy. And I'm talking a canopy that's inches to maybe a couple of feet thick. Okay? Nobody really knows what the temperatures would have been for sure. They can project, okay? But they can't know, right? So, now let's move on. And I know this is fast. The next one they'll say is, well, we see canopies on other planets. What about Venus? You know, you look at Venus and it looks pretty covered, doesn't it? Just, well, that's its atmosphere. It's not a canopy because it goes all the way down to the surface. That's called atmosphere. And it's just a mixture of carbon dioxide and nitrogen. 96.5% carbon dioxide, 3.4% nitrogen, and traces of other gases. It's not a canopy. It may look like it to us from here looking at it, but when they done probes and whatever, it goes all the way to the ground. It's its atmosphere. It's not a canopy. And then we'll use Venus when we talk about one of the problems that science has with the canopy theory that they present that is a problem for the canopy theory. So, again, it's just atmosphere. Then they'll use the Genesis 7 that I read saying, well, a lot of rain fell from somewhere, and Genesis 7:11 says the floodgates of the skies were open, so had to be a canopy, right? Does this imply one? Maybe. But if we read Genesis 7:11, and we're big on order, right? In other words, how does the scripture say things happened in what order? So let's look at that again and think about this, okay? Genesis 7:11. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, on the same day, all the fountains of the great deep burst open. What happened first? Why would God list it that way? Why would Moses, as he's inspired by the Holy Spirit to record this for, why would he list it that way? Why wouldn't he say the floodgates of the sky were open, and because of all the water that hit the earth, it caused all kinds of problems, and the floodgates broke open. Notice the order. You have a cause and effect process going on here. See, if you have the water coming from a subterranean chamber that's worldwide, and we're going to get into this when we talk about, you know, I'm going to leave more of that stuff to Jared, but I'm thinking he's going to probably touch on that. I know a little bit what he's considering. I don't know what he's going to bring you. Okay, but he'll probably do that or show you the video of the hydroplate theory. But if the water is coming up from below because the earth that was between water, crust, water, okay, if that thing is collapsing, or there's a fissure that's been created and it started to collapse, and that thing is coming down on that water. It's just shooting that water out. There's other things about the water that are interesting. When God created the earth, knowing that he was going to flood it, remember, he's omniscient. Doesn't mean he made everybody do anything, everything that they did. He just knew what was going to happen. He knew the choices people were going to make and what he was going to have to do. So he created the earth that way. Water in the subterranean chamber with a crust above it, you know, and the mantle below it, so to speak. And then water above that on the earth. All of that's going to create pressure, and it turns that water that's in the subterranean chambers, it creates it and makes it supercritical water, which has tremendous power and heat. Okay? And that's all scientifically proven. Okay? This isn't stuff that, you know, that God had to, some miraculous, this is proven. It happened. Okay? So, when they say something like that, this is where your opportunity is to say, well, look at what that says again. Notice the order. What's this great deep burst open and the floodgates of the sky were open? I can understand the floodgates of the sky are still questionable, but notice it. How come we're not talking about the things that are coming from below? Wouldn't that be kind of important? And see, and that's where Walt Brown saw this is what they're missing. And that's where he started with this whole theory, you know, involving, you know, hydroplates, plates that would slide on a bed of water based upon natural processes of physics, when a fissure would happen in the earth and release all this subterranean water that was supercritical, okay, due to tidal pumping and other things. I'm not going to get into that a lot. I'm hoping Mr. Schaefer might talk more about that. But for example, in Proverbs 3:19, right, it says, "The Lord by wisdom founded the earth. By understanding he established the heavens. By his knowledge the deeps were broken up, and the skies dripped with dew." Do you notice the order? Do you notice the order? Okay. So there's a cause and effect thing going on here. Now, if you look at the Hebrew word in there, when it's talking about broken up, the deep's broken up, that's a Hebrew word, baka. That's how I'm going to say it. And it means broken up or burst open. That's the same word in Genesis 7:11, when it says, "In the same day all the fountains of the great deep burst open." Okay? And it's used several other times in the Old Testament. And it's describing something breaking open. Okay? All right, and then you have a couple other words that are used here that we're going to come back and talk about. Not now, but there's two words primarily used for rain. There's going to be like normal rain and then like a violent, just super heavy rain. That's the word geshem, and that's used in Genesis 7:11, and it's used in one other, well, maybe two other places in the Old Testament. If I remember right, I'd have to look at my notes, but I know it's in Ezekiel 13 because I just read through Ezekiel in my Bible reading not long ago. So anyway, that's kind of that's what people are going to propose for a canopy. Now remember I told you about longevity of life? People say, well, okay, Mr. Smarty Pants, and that's always going to be me, okay? I'm talking about me. They'll say, all right, so explain to me why people lived for 900 years and then after the flood, all of a sudden they didn't. Okay. I can't tell you exactly why they lived for 900 years. I can give you a good idea of why they lived 900 years, and I can tell you scientifically a really good reason why they didn't live as long after the flood. Because the process is physically, when a subterranean water is released and it creates all these problems with the earth's crust, where it's moving, and, you know, and all these things are going on, it's creating all this issues, fissures, and everything are opening up, not to mention this huge, you know, chasm that opens up as water shooting out, all right? But what it does is it's releasing all these isotopes. This is scientific. They know it does this. It releases all these isotopes. When the flood occurred, it released thousands of isotopes that they're virtually certain did not affect humanity before that. You want to know why? Oh, you know, you got all these genetic deals, you know, 23andMe, you know, whatever, all those, you know, where you can send in and find out all your genetics. They've been able to test, and they figured out where all the bad things that happen, you know, as we go through each generation. Before I get too much further, I want to get it right here in my notes. So what it was is these electrical currents, because the crust was fluttering, all these things was going on, this gigantic flux of neutrons that produced a few thousand new isotopes, usually light, meaning they're not heavy, like uranium and stuff, usually light, chemical elements. Because they had fewer or a few more neutrons than normal. One of the isotopes that was produced was carbon-14. Ever heard of that? That's how they date things, right? Well, in the human, here's what carbon-14 is in your body, okay? And this went in when the fissures happened and all this fluttering of the crust was taking place and it was released. All these isotopes went into everything, plants, animals, everything, all right? So you're exposed to it, you're breathing it, you're eating it, you're around it, all right? So it's bombarding your body. So it's a very, very, very small a very, very small distortion at the atomic level. What happens is when the carbon-14 in your body decays, it becomes nitrogen. Too much nitrogen in our atmosphere will kill us, okay? So this nitrogen is actually what begins a process of the wrinkling and the aging at the atomic. Very, very, very subtle. Very, very, very subtle. But it's happening thousands of times. In a minute, thousands of times. But it's very, very, very slight. Right? So this begins that process, and then based on genetics and everything else, it's not standard within a family. It doesn't mean if you have a twin or whether you have a younger brother, it doesn't mean they're going to suffer the same rate of decay or less. It just doesn't work that way. Don't know why. I can't totally explain it, but it's more environmental over the long term. But these are some of the things that they've discovered. Okay, so these 23andMe, what they've been able to find out is that all these mutations, these bad things that started happening, because they've been able to get all these genetics and take them as a data group and study them, they figured out that all these genetics that started to mutate and go bad, but not so bad that it's completely all the way through the human population where it's just killing us off in big numbers early, which, again, this is all numbers, and I'm trying to throw too much stuff at you, trying to make this as generalized as I can, but they found out that if the dates that come back, both in European and African, I'm not sure if they have the Asian number in there, they're the same. About 3100 BC, around there. You know, there's a little bit of wobble in that date. Well, the dates for the flood, based on whether you look at the Masoretic texts or the Septuagint, which are the Greek translation of the Hebrew, and those, the Septuagint is technically the oldest translation of the Hebrew. The Masoretics are dated to 900 AD until we got the Dead Sea Scrolls. But the Septuagint still predated the Dead Sea Scrolls. You'll get a date for the flood of anywhere from about 2650, 2660 BC. Okay? Or about 1650 years after Adam was, if you're following the genealogy and the Masoretic. Again, there's arguments between the Masoretic and the Septuagint on dates, people's ages. So that's why you get this wobble in the years, which is about 500 to 700 years difference. But that genetic information that they have that shows when all the mutations really took off matches very closely to when the flood occurred. And so all the isotopes get released that they've never been exposed to before, and all these things start to happen. See, that's scientific. Now, this is tidbittle, you know, information, but you can stand and tell somebody, and they say, oh, yeah, so you're going to say a guy lived to 900, and yeah, I can explain what happened scientifically. They're going to be like, uh-huh. I don't think what I just told you is real hard. You can learn it. But what I'm saying is this is where you get the opportunity to act. You're not saying, well, you just got to believe it. You know, you're not saying that. You're actually reasoning with him. And I always think God said to Isaiah, come, let us reason together. So this is, you know, Paul goes into the synagogues. What was he doing? Reasoning with them. Primarily from the scripture because they believed the scripture. But what I'm saying, we got to be able to do that, don't we? So again, the mutations take place because of carbon 14, but where the real problems come is when they make the DNA and that big line in the long chain of DNA, the proteins get folded. And these mutations that came forward from these isotopes that were released, remember there's thousands. I mentioned carbon 14 is just one. There's thousands of them. It causes the folds to not fold correctly, and so you get these little mutations. They're virtually everywhere in human population, these mutations, but they're not extensive enough to cause really bad results where we're all dying at, you know, 25 to 35 years old. But they're there. But they keep getting worse with every passing generation. See? The only thing that keeps us living the same length of time or longer is because medicine is making advances on how to battle against that. Okay, so just interesting. I guarantee you most of you probably have never heard that information before that I just shared with you. Maybe Jared. You know, and we owe a debt of gratitude to Mr. Schaefer for what he's done in our assembly for evolution creation stuff. Most of you folks that have been here for a while know that. But he had done a tremendous amount of work on that. And so he's kind of like me. We're kind of evolution creation geeks. You know, we get into that stuff. Ooh, this is kind of cool. But I think I can geek out, but I'm nowhere in Jared's neighborhood. And I don't mean that negatory. He is so knowledgeable. When we got questions about creation, we go to Jared. So, okay, so those are the canopy, you know, what they'll present with the canopy. Here's the problems that they talk about. And I'm going to try and get through these before we get done. Shouldn't be too much of a problem to get through these. There's seven of them. Pressure problem. Okay, a canopy holding anywhere near 40 feet. Remember, they're going to go less because of the major problems that show up. But a canopy holding only 40 feet of liquid water or its equivalent weight of vapor or ice, what would turn into 40 feet of water, doubles the Earth's atmosphere's pressure. It makes the oxygen and nitrogen toxic to many animals, including us humans. Doubles it. That's a problem. So that's why they always limit it less than 40 feet. So here's a tidbit information for you. For a vapor, remember, to keep something vapor, to make water turn into steam, you have to turn temperature up, don't you? I mean, I'm talking, the ladies, this is a no-brainer for the ladies, but us guys are like, how do you boil water? You know, so some of us can be that way, right? So, you know, you turn, and when it's boiling, you see the steam rising off it, right? That's the vapor. It's turning into a gas. In order to maintain a vapor canopy, the temperature at the base of the canopy, no matter how thick it is, closest to the earth, the base, would have to be at least 220 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, that's going to radiate downward and heat that. You know, you think they got worried about global warming now? See, it just tells you, scientifically, the earth just wouldn't. So could God, through miracle, do that? I suppose, would he? I don't think so, because he left all these things in place so that we could discover these laws of physics and use them intelligently, make discoveries, use them in a positive way. So again, pressure. It's not going to support life. Heat. We just mentioned heat with pressure. But all canopies also have major heat problems. What do I mean by that? The larger the canopy, or the thicker, the greater the heat problem. A vapor canopy. We just talked about vapor canopy. Okay, there's an equation I'm not going to share with you that you can use based upon how much atmosphere there is and how much liquid would condense out of that, and then how much would condense out of a canopy. And if enough water fell from a vapor canopy, say during a flood, to form a layer of water, say 35 to 40 feet, the temperature of the water and atmosphere at first approximation would rise 810 degrees Fahrenheit. See, if a guy knows a little bit of science and you start engaging him in a canopy discussion, he'll destroy you in no time with science. Okay? And if your only reach is, well, it was God, it was a miracle. He's going to like, okay, so let me see. The dates that you're saying this is accurate in the book of Genesis, for 1,650 years, God created this miracle. Well, this kind of an issue? Come on. You know, now you've moved into the unbelievable in most people's minds. You get what I'm saying here? I mean, it doesn't make sense. So that's the vapor. Liquid or ice? Number one, it would have to, because it's liquid or ice, it has to be high enough in a near-Earth orbit that it could travel about 17,000 miles an hour. So this thing's... Okay, this is based upon what science observes now, okay? And then, as it would be released in a liquid form to enter the atmosphere, what happens when anything that's in a near-Earth orbit comes into Earth's atmosphere? What happens to it? Remember what they put on the space shuttles underneath? What were those? They were called heat tiles, weren't they? Yeah, to keep it from burning up. Okay, the kinetic energy... that would be, as this is entering the atmosphere, the amount of heat that it would release, this is where I told you, you could get up to 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit on the heat released if this is all coming down pretty much in a very short period of time. So you see why this is just like, whoa. All right? So you got heat, you got, you know, the pressure, you got the light problem, all right? So... how does light get through? Remember, I told you that it's written in Genesis 1:14 that God placed the stars and the moon and sun for seasons so they could be able to observe them. Okay, if you've got a canopy that's thick enough to produce 35 feet of water, you're not going to be able to see anything unless it's directly above you. And it's going to be like a keyhole look. Just very, very concentrated. You're not going to be able to see the sky and the constellations. You just won't. You just can't with a canopy. It just won't. Sunlight, okay, so a canopy would reflect and absorb considerable sunlight. How then could many tropical plants that require much sunlight today, which they found, you know, in today's present polar regions, how could it survive for centuries under a pre-flood? See, these are all, they're going to come at you. This is what Walt Brown thought of, see, before he ever got delved into this. You're like, okay, how is this explainable? The nucleation, that's the nucleus, form raindrops, microscopic particles called condensation nuclei must be present to initiate condensation. I learned this many, many years ago when I worked for the airlines, when I was a dispatcher, had to know weather and all that stuff, okay? Falling rain sweeps away these nuclei when it falls and it cleans the atmosphere. It also reduces the opportunity for further condensation because the nuclei is gone. Can you imagine if all this fell, whoom, no nuclei for further condensation? So how'd it keep raining for 40 days, Mr. Smarty Pants? The nuclei's gone. Oh, well, there was a bunch of volcanoes. Really? All across the world? Well, we show that volcanoes are pretty much centered in a certain area of the world. They're placed throughout the world, but not, you know, close enough to produce what you're claiming. So, I mean, you got a nucleation problem. That's what I'm trying to help you understand, okay? So, it wouldn't suffice for 40 days. Greenhouse problem. This is the Venus issue. The greenhouse problem is while sunlight can pass through glass into a greenhouse, heat in a greenhouse has more difficulty radiating back out through the glass. Many of us have ever been in a homemade know what that's all about. If it's well done, greenhouse, you go in here, come out a soaking wet mess, right? The greenhouse effect traps the heat inside the greenhouse, raising its temperature. All canopy theories have a huge greenhouse problem. As temperatures under a canopy rose, and we see that that's pretty consistent in what we've looked at so far, more water then would evaporate from the Earth's surface. Up it goes, right? especially in its oceans. And there were, obviously, oceans in the beginning of time. And this water, this vapor in the air means a greater greenhouse effect. Warmer atmosphere, even more evaporation. It just feeds upon itself. So it creates what's called a runaway greenhouse effect. And that's what they know happened in Venus. You know why they know? Because the temperature on Venus is 700 degrees Fahrenheit hotter than it should be based on where it's placed in reference to the sun. Why is it 750 degrees hotter than it should be? Greenhouse effect. See, so there's constants you can see running through these issues that they bring up. All right? Then you got the support problem. What supported the canopy? In other words, how did it stay up? Okay, a vapor canopy would rapidly mix with the atmosphere just as steam does above a kitchen stove, right? Once the water vapor contacted the Earth's surface, it would condense. What's keeping it up there? We talked about it had to be 220 degrees minimum to hold a canopy. There's going to be no life on Earth, okay? It just nothing will grow. A liquid canopy would quickly evaporate and then diffuse through the atmosphere. Neither type of canopy could have survived for many centuries before the flood. It just can't. It wouldn't. An ice canopy, a pure ice canopy, would vaporize in the vacuum of space. How do they know that? You guys familiar with dry ice? Anybody know what dry ice is? I know Jared and Mrs. Schaefer in the back's waving her arm. Thank you, Sue. It's the stuff that when the rock bands come out and they're playing their big hit and the stuff rolls across the floor, that vapor, that's dry ice. That's what's going on. You know what's going on? It's evaporating out. Okay? So it's vaporizing. All right. Ice is structurally weak. An ice shell could not withstand tidal stresses. Remember, with the moon moving, it causes tidal stress. Meteoric, we'll pass that. A spinning ice shell could not withstand the powerful and centrifugal forces at the Earth's equator and the crushing gravitational forces along its spin axis. Just, it doesn't have the properties to do it. Okay? Ultraviolet problem. Ozone in Earth's upper atmosphere blocks the sun's destructive ultraviolet light. But a canopy surrounding the atmosphere would be exposed to ultraviolet light. Therefore, any water in a canopy would disassociate, that's a fancy word for separate, into hydrogen and oxygen. How do you make water? H2O. They separate, you have no water. That means it goes, whoop, gone. So the canopy's destroyed just on that alone, the ultraviolet problem. They could just whip that on you and prove that scientifically, and they'd say, argument over, no matter what kind of canopy you got, argument over. And you'd be standing there going, okay? So you need to understand, those are the seven problems that science looks at, the canopy theory, and says, it just literally, in the words of Mr. Schaefer, the canopy theory, brothers and sisters, holds no water. It just holds no water. So if you've held that idea, you need to rethink it based on the information I've given you and start to ask yourself, okay, then how did this flood happen? And that's where the alternative comes in, on where we have to look at, did the water come from above just because it says the rain, the floodgates burst open? Or did it come from below and with such extreme force based on the laws of physics and mechanics and that kind of stuff, that it shot supersonically up and just showered over the Earth? Remember, when this, and we'll talk about the hydroplate theory and the rupture in the Earth, and talk about that next week because we're at 8 o'clock, but when that thing opened up, it opened up all the way around the Earth, okay? And it was shooting water out. And we'll talk about the subterranean chambers and the water next week. We'll talk about Rakia. We'll look at the verses 6 through 9, 10 in particular in Genesis 1. And we'll talk about what that rakia was and help you to understand that. Okay? Yes, Mr. Miller.
So, if there's no water canopy, are they saying that the atmosphere pre-flood is the same as the atmosphere of today?
Well, they're saying there's no canopy.
Right. But there's no canopy, but is the atmosphere the same? That was kind of what I'm trying. The reason I ask is I was always under the assumption that part of the water canopy caused increased pressure in the atmosphere, similar to a hyperbaric chamber, which allowed people to live longer.
That's where I just addressed. And I didn't go into that as deeply as I could. They did, I'll tell you, they did, in 1981, they did a guy wrote a book called The Waters Above. I'm trying to remember, I think his last name's Dixon. But anyway, he said they actually checked out, would that work? Would a canopy allow for longer life? And they put mice in caves and never in their lives exposed to any of the stuff that has to do with ultraviolet light or anything that we're exposed to when we are above on the earth. No difference in their lifespan. None. They lived the same length of life. There was no, so they said that doesn't mean anything. What I can tell you is the way that the environment was set up when it was first put together, water stayed closer to the ground because it's apparent that the book of Genesis says that it had never rained. They'd never seen rain. And there are physics and mechanics that would operate under that environment, which would allow for the watering of the land and would provide for rivers. It had to do with the topography that was much different than what we see today. But, yeah, so if I understand your question, it did not provide any kind of help or assistance to a longer life. Everything that we've looked at and all the questions that are raised, a canopy is super detrimental to life on Earth. It is not beneficial. So, scientifically. Now, you could stand and say, God, by miracle, he did this for 1,650 years. Well, we'll look at all of Scripture and see, does that make sense, or does it seem like the information we're getting in other places in the Bible support the subterranean water and the rupture of the earth and everything associated with that? Next week, I'll slow it down. We'll probably take 3 weeks to do this total. Probably another 2 weeks. I don't think that'll bother Jared. I don't believe so. You don't have any conflicts the next 2 Wednesdays, do you? 3 Wednesdays from now, whatever? Mr. Schaefer? Not that he's aware of. What I mean is if I go an extra week, it's not going to throw you off or you're going to... Okay. So just to slow it down so we can be able to look through this, and we'll review some of this. Again, there's a lot of information, and that book, again, is In the Beginning by Walt Brown. It's harder to find online. You used to be able to go to his website, creationscience.org, I think. And you can read everything that's in that book online free. You can print anything that you want off of that book free. You just cannot download it. It won't allow you. Okay? The information I'm giving you is coming from a section in the book called Frequently Asked Questions, but things that were interesting to me when I first read the book. And I read that book all the way through. That's pretty heavy stuff, some of that science, but worth the read. Thank you for your guys' attention.